Hello and welcome to The Record Swappers. My name is Gabriel.
And I'm Viking.
What is The Record Swappers, Viking?
Well, for us, I kind of feel like we're not too much on the book side. So for us, a great story arc is like a really good album. Mm. So instead of doing a book club, we do the record club.
Yeah.
Where we each time exchange some music.
Yeah. So yeah. So we swap some records. Such a punny name. Such a funny name. Yeah. So yeah,
descriptive name, I would say. But, okay.
Yeah, but still, I think it's funny in a sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, how are you?
I'm good. I've been good. How have you been?
I'm good. You know the thing is, what's the matter with you? Is our wonderful segment that I do every time. Yes, I'm actually good. I've been having a lot of fun trips to Stockholm. We're from the capital of Sweden, where we're from. Stockholm is the capital of Sweden, right?
Yeah, but you made it sound like we are from Stockholm.
I mean, the capital of Sweden is Stockholm. We are from Sweden, but not from Stockholm.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're from a little other place. But I went and visited Stockholm for a couple of days and saw some live music for some bands / artists who are releasing their music on all the social media and all the digital places, and also on vinyl. So I bought a couple of vinyls in Stockholm and listened to some music, and it's very nice.
Yeah, I mean, we're recording this at the end of February. And kind of February for both of us been kind of a vinyl month. We kind of expanded our vinyl collection very much.
A lot. And also a lot of new music from artists I follow and you follow. Both have been coming out. Yeah. So, and the artist that we're going to talk about today, technically.
So, what are your favorite pickups?
I would say probably the one that we went and saw, Dodi. And Orla, Dodi Clark and Orla Gartland. It was very nice picking up her album. Very nice to have it in hand. But I haven't been able to listen to all of them. But I have found a cool James Brown one and a cool Blue ABBA one. So I'm gonna listen to those later. That's gonna be fun.
For me, I would say I found Kraftwerk, The Man Machine. Is a really good record, and I'm happy to have it in my collection. And what more did I find? Leonard Cohen's Songs from a Room. It's like one of my favorite records of all time, and now I have it both on CD and vinyl.
I found that Crack Up single, that was very nice, where they have the with an Icelandic choir in the background. That's a cool single, actually.
Yeah, and it's...
So, yeah. And it's actually a throwback.
Yeah, it's irrelevant. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what we've been doing, collecting a little vinyls. I've been listening to music.
Yeah.
And then, of course, work. Like Rihanna says, work.
So, we're moving on. Today we're covering what?
What's it? Garfunkel and Simon, isn't that? No, wait. Simon and Garfunkel, that's it. Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme, which is actually a very long record name or album name. But that's what we're covering today.
Yeah. You were the one who chose the record for today, so explain why.
I don't know if I like really grew up with like my mom and dad listening to them, so I don't know how I actually fell into it, maybe just like listening to radio and hearing Sound of Silence or there are a lot in music like The Graduate and which are some songs, but I just like Simon and Garfunkel. I love lyrics a lot, and they have good lyrics, and they have good this is weird to say, but good chemistry when it comes to music, at least like how they do music, like they sing and play music. So it's I've always liked that they're very on the same page, well, at least when you listen to them. in a sense. But very good lyrically and very good musically. And that I like a lot, actually.
So, is there any reason why you chose the third album?
On this album, it has one of my favorite songs, though, like not maybe all time, but at least of their collection. And I was listening to that song one day when I was just going on the bus, because it has a little with commutes and stuff, and I actually put up a Instagram post, posting up a poem or lyric on my own, or what you want to call it, using their little line, a little line from their song as a reference. So it was cool. I just thought I wanted to listen to it because of that.
Yeah,
nice. I get it in my head a couple of times every year and like, this is so awesome! I think it's a little underappreciated, so it's gonna be fun talking about it today.
Yeah, I was excited because I'm also a very big fan of Simon and Garfunkel, but the partially ill record is one of I think it's the record I've heard least of them, so it was kind of fun to dive in, and like I listened to this record and then I went through their whole discography and listened to everything.
I mean, of all the records we've done, this is just our third episode, but still, this is the shortest one, the shortest record or album.
Yeah.
It's like 28, 29 minutes maybe. I mean, that's a big difference.
Kind of a breeze.
When listening, yeah.
Yeah, and comparing it to our two other records. Yeah.
I mean, my commute to work is like half an hour, so I could listen to it to work and back in.
It's
twice.
Half my commute. I can listen to this and one more record.
Nice. So yeah, but that's why I chose it. I just think they're awesome, and it's one of my favorite songs on their record. So yeah.
Yeah.
You wanna go into a little?
Yeah. Tell us some facts.
Okay. Some boring generic facts.
Yeah, I want you to sound like a computer.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Like a robot speaking.
Yeah. Simon and Garfunkel.
But Simon and Garfunkel are known as a folk rock duo, of course, of Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel. They were active from 1956 to 1970. They started very young. I mean, they're like met in elementary school and started in... and then became kind of not famous like we know them today, but famous in a small crowd like in high school and stuff. So they were probably around 17, 18, 19, very young.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very cool that. But over that period that where they were together, they're known for one certain thing, except their music, their amazing music, is that they had a lot of artistic disagreements. So over the course of from 1956 to 1970, they kind of broke up and reunited, and they kind of reunited around 5-6 times, which is kind of, or no, 7 times actually, which is kind of fun. I mean, that's if you at least trust Wikipedia and other places. But they made in total 5 studio albums, and I picked the third one, like you said, Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme.
Mm-hmm.
But they have all, we can just go through them because there's not a lot, but we have Wednesday Morning, Sounds of Silence, one of the with the very famous song, the one we took, and then Bookends, and then Bridge Over Troubled Waters, or Water. I think it's, before we go on, I think it's really cool that they're so well known and so well established in the music world, but also like normally like in pop culture, because they have a lot of soundtracks or they're in soundtracks, that they have only made 5 studio albums. That's very little studio albums, but then still to have such a big impact on the world.
Yeah.
That's very cool, I think. And they've been nominated for a lot of stuff because of the songs they made, and they won like 10 Grammy Awards for certain stuff, like the songs and stuff, and become inducted in Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1990. So it's very cool.
Mm.
I mean, Bridge Over Troubled Water is ranked around 50th on, or 51st on Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums. Of all time. So that's cool. But before they were called Simon and Garfunkel, they were actually called Tom and Jerry, which I thought was very fun because I grew up watching Tom and Jerry cartoons. But if you look around a little, you can see that Simon was called Let's see. Simon wanted to call himself Jerry, or that's after Jerry Landis, a girl that he dated once, and Garfunkel called himself Tom Graf because he had an interest in mathematics, which is like a big nerd alert. But I thought that was fun that they were first before they got their studio record deal with Columbia Records. They were known as Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. And like,
especially with their history of being like fighting and then coming back together as friends. Like with the cartoon Tom and Jerry, they fight sometimes, but they're also friends.
Yeah.
That's a little funny.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. And how they kept the trend of going like name and name.
Yeah.
and like stuck with that.
Yeah, I like that too a lot. No, but they're a cool band. But then they actually, as of the recording of today, they actually came out with a new vinyl yesterday, which looks like a like remaster or collection thing. But it was still fun that I was out on Google and then I got a little notification because I've been searching them so much on Google. They're like, hey, you should probably like this. So that was actually a little fun that they're technically still releasing music.
Yeah.
So that's cool. But yeah, the album itself. Should we go into the album itself?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. We found some fun facts when we were recording. When we researching this album, right?
Yeah, we went down some holes.
And we're going to get into some. But I just thought that there was something that really stood out to me. We've been talking, like, when we talked about Crack Up with the hiatus and stuff, how much time they had with, like, before they were recording. They had a hiatus, but then the recording was very fast, we thought. But I found some information that Simon and Garfunkel had for this album 4 months.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, nothing at all.
Yeah, because their second album, Sound and Silence, was also released in 1966.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this was released October
24,
66.
Yeah.
I don't know. And so then it's like,
when you look at some places, there's like quotations that some manager or maybe Simon Garfunkel said, well, Sounds of Silence was a rush job, in quotations. I'm like, if they thought that was a rush job, they had 4 months to do this.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. I mean, at that time, artists were like expected to release 2 to 3 albums a year. So I mean, to think that they made 2 albums on 1 year like that, we think it's kind of crazy today, but in those times they did that a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, how the music industry has changed and stuff. Actually, so yeah, but they signed with Columbia Records, as I said, and made the music and stuff. And during the time that they made the music, they were actually contacted by a director called Mike Nichols that has made a movie that I said earlier, The Graduate, that I think you've seen, right? With Sean Penn.
Yeah, I've seen it in like high school around there, so it's been a while. Yeah. But
for people who don't know The Graduate, you've probably seen it like parodied in Family Guy or Simpsons, like a lot of people have.
Yeah.
But it's basically young school kids, I don't know, paying a hooker to sleep with them or something. I don't remember, man. It's a weird movie.
Yeah, no, I always for some reason I always mix up The Graduate and the Poets Society.
Yeah, which is
I don't know why, but they kind of mix in my head.
Which is a very weird mix. But during the time of the recording of the album, like I said, the director contacted Simon and Garfunkel about wanting them to do music for the soundtrack. And they actually made a couple of songs, but at first Paul Simon didn't actually want to do it because he thought it was like selling out and he didn't want to do it. But after a couple of talks, he read the script and talked a lot more with the director Mike Nicholson, found him very smart and witty, so he said, yeah, we'll do it. And he first wrote 2 other songs that didn't actually go well with the director. So the third song that he offered him was an incomplete song that became a very famous song today, Mrs. Robinson. And that song is not on the album that we're listening to, but I just thought it was cool that he really took his time to write down a couple of songs and give it to them. Then he just gave him some unfinished song that became one of the more famous songs they have.
Yeah, it's probably like
top three or four.
I mean, like, it's probably Bridge Over Troubled Water, then it's Mr. Robinson.
Yeah, and then Sounds of Silence, maybe.
Yeah, and Sounds of Silence or Homeward Bound.
Yeah. And you can see that, like, those songs that we're talking about are high up on the Rolling Stones and won Grammys and stuff, so that's very nice, too. So I think that's very cool. And I actually think that it's a good album all over. I mean, this is one of those albums you really benefit of to listening to if you have a good sound system or headphones, because they're very lyrical and musical.
Yeah, and there's lots of
small details, right?
No, but I'm forgetting the English word.
Say it in Swedish.
Stämmer.
Yeah, harmonies.
Yeah, harmonies. Right? Yes, yeah, no, that's the word.
Yeah. No, but they have really nice harmonies, and that's something I like. That I like a lot of music today, and we actually listened to some music yesterday that from the album I bought and from the show I went to, and you can notice that they have the harmonies, and some of the harmonies are the same sounds like Simon and Garfunkel have, and even though maybe they're not related, you can just—it's very nice that you can find that still today. It's not like disappeared. this is a very short album, so there's not to listen to, but it's a very short album, I think. And they were supposed to produce so many albums a year. It's hard to find a lot of information about the album itself overall.
Yeah.
It's when you go into more like the songs, you can talk about how they are musically and lyrically. But still, I think when it comes to, if you want to talk like musically, this it's a very good album. But when it comes to like historical stuff, I don't know. It's hard to say a lot because there's not a lot of history to find, because they just wanted to make an album and then go to the next.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like when you make a
rush job.
Yeah, but when you make a record on such short time, there's not that much to happen.
Like. Yeah, but it's very nice still to see. Mm. But yeah, I think that's all I have. I mean, it's just a cool album, man.
Yeah.
Should we go into the fun part?
Yeah, we can talk a little about the songs.
Yeah, we normally always go through the songs if we can. We don't talk about every song, but we try to find a little nugget of information about every song, or just tell us, tell you our thoughts about it. Like, oh, this part lyrically was cool, or this part musically was cool.
Yeah.
So the first song.
Gonna have me pronouncing this. Scarborough Fair and slash Canticle.
Yeah, I think.
It's like can and tickle.
Can you tickle a Scarborough Fair?
So what is Scarborough Fair?
I mean, the song, at least. I mean, the song is about a list of tasks, or like Herculean quests to do so you can win back your former lover, but actually these tasks are very impossible, so you probably won't accomplish them. And it's a way of maybe saying that you're trying to grasp at the former love or a former lover, and you will never get it back. And that's kind of sad in a beautiful way, of like you're trying to sometimes get back to something you had and you love, but it's gone now. It's almost like shaking hands with a ghost. You know, you can see them, but you can't touch them, in a sense.
Yeah,
no. Weird analogy, but that's the first I can make of.
I thought you were going to take it up here, but I read somewhere, and I can't remember exactly. But the Scarborough Fair is like an old like fair that like extends back to the Middle Ages, and where the name come from.
Yeah, of course, it's like its name. It's a fair, and so they have markets and court jesters running around, probably in the old days, but not now. We have one here where we live in Örebro. We have one.
Yeah.
that's like, what, 170 or 80 years old now?
Yeah, I think it's
so. So we have kind of the same thing, so we could recognize, maybe not when it comes to lyric, but like the feeling of a fair, going to a fair.
But what is a canticle then?
I don't know. What is a canticle? It's not a tickle. Can you tickle, right? No. It's not a weird toy for kids or something.
Yeah. It's it comes from the Latin word of canticulum. Mm. My Latin is good.
Yes, of course.
It's kind of a hymn or psalm or another song of praise taken from a biblical or holy text other than the Psalms.
Oh, okay. So not the Psalms from the Bible.
It's not a psalm. Yeah. It's not the Psalm.
Yeah. Like not. It's a smaller band.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of where it comes from. And I mean, Simon Garfunkel had and like in a lot of their songs, like religious overtones.
Yeah, they have a couple of stuff. One of my favorite songs, maybe the song that made me pick the album, has some religious overtones too.
Yeah, that's true.
That we're gonna come to later. This song is very cool. I like the sound of it. That it's very like, that has light the light guitar that goes through, you know.
Uh-huh.
And but that's because it's mimicking maybe a lute that they used to play, and they have that those very airy chimes throughout the songs, wind chimes. So I like it. It's a good song.
Yeah.
But what does and they sing a lot of the stuff that's about that record's name, right? That's where this Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme, or as you should shorten it, PSRT.
Yeah.
Pessert.
Pessert.
Yeah, that's the anagram for album now. Pessert.
But
they sing that a lot, and those stuff have meaning, right? Also, some Bible meanings, right? Or at least olden day.
They have some meanings like that, but they're kind of a representation, like in all the folklore.
Mm.
What I read is like partially
like Celtian or Celts. They had this folklore, I think.
Yeah.
Some of it.
And it's like, what the herbs does, like partially took away the bitterness.
Mm.
Sage represents strength and wisdom. Rosemary symbolizes memory and faithfulness.
Especially her baby.
Time was courage.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. You didn't like my Rosemary's Baby joke?
It was kind of awesome. So I'm a big fan of that movie, so I can't blame you for making it.
No, but I like that they using... I couldn't find any like big reasoning behind the reasons why they took that also for the name of the album. But I mean, if we think about maybe what they mean, the herbs themselves, and then how they take that for the story of the song, I think you can find some context like that the album should try to have as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
That you should have these you have these impossible tasks, but as you do that, you try to take away the bitterness of life and then gain strength and wisdom and
mm-hmm.
all these stuff. And that's kind of cool. And I don't know if that's why, but if I have a feeling that that could be a reason for picking that as a name for the song, as the whole album is a story of different stuff. Like life lessons and life stories. I just blew his mind right
now. Yeah, I'm just stunned. I don't know what to say.
Let's
just move on.
Let's move on. But it's a good song.
It really is.
They're all good.
Kind
of. there's a couple of filler songs.
Yeah.
The second song is called Patterns. And this one has some weird lyrics when you first listen to it. Because they talk about like a rat in a maze. When you like listen to Simon Garfunkel, you don't think them singing about a rat in a maze.
Yeah.
But I like this song too, and it has that, when it comes to the musical standpoint, it has that guitar still.
Yeah.
But from going from the light guitar from the first song, this has a little more hard plucking, or maybe it's a bass, but that's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
And then it has these drums and cymbals that goes through the songs, and some shakers and movers, man. So they transition through these stuff. It's very cool. It's almost like a certain movie, a Planet of the Apes movie soundtrack, where they have that too. But the Patterns, the song, do you know what it's about? Like the rat in the maze and all that. Like what they're talking about, what they're trying to akin to.
Yeah, tell me.
You're like, yeah, I know, but instead of being stupid, you can tell me.
Yeah. If you gotta ask a question, you need to answer the question.
It's good. It was a rhetorical one anyway. Yeah. I mean, you're not smart enough.
No. I don't get it.
No, but like the rat in a maze, it akins to like the average life of a person is like no more predetermined than the life of a rat in a maze. Like even if you go right, it doesn't matter. If you go left, it's like it's all predetermined, and I like that. It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
So it's a good song too, and it's I'm actually always surprised. We already said this, that it's a short album, but sometimes I'm still surprised how short some of these songs are. I don't know exactly, but around maybe 2 minutes or as the shortest maybe, and some are three to five as the longest. And they can fit so many things in when it comes to all of the songs, lyrically and musically. That's kind of cool.
Yeah,
definitely. But let's go to the second song, or third actually.
Oh. We're brushing by Cloudy. I think.
I mean, I want to try to make some joke here. Like, I have one. It's very hard to find something on this because it's like a filler song, so it's like a little fluffy. It's just there for fluff.
Yeah. It's kind of a fluff piece.
Yeah. So it's that's why it's so cloudy. Though I mean, I love Paul, Simon and Garfunkel. They're cool, but I have to make the joke that I made yesterday. I think it makes me laugh. It doesn't make you laugh.
But remember the joke.
Yeah. I made it laugh. That cloudy is maybe another word of just, it's a song about his pee, probably. His bee being pee being cloudy. See, it's a good joke. Moving on.
To one of the famous songs.
We're homeward bound, right? Yeah. Homeward bound.
Yeah. I mean, Paul Simon said in an interview this was written when he was traveling in and around Liverpool.
And he played a lot of the clubs and the streets there. He was, what's it called, busking, let's say, you know.
Exactly. And it was at the age of 22.
And he said it feels like a snapshot, like a photograph of long time.
Right.
And he said, I like that about it, but I don't like the song that much.
Well,
I mean, that's kind of fun that he likes the painting, the picture he paints, but the song itself. But it's one of their most famous and sold songs of all time, probably.
Yeah.
It's at the top three.
It's always ironic. It seems like lots of musicians have that problem. Like the songs they don't really like almost always becomes the most popular one.
Especially nowadays, because it's been going for a long time, but especially with like pop songs or poppy songs taking over the radio and selling a lot, some artists don't like doing them, but they have to do it so they can have one on the album to just market them. But those sell a lot and they become quite known, and especially if you think like 20, 30 years down, like we can look at some, and that's kind of cool.
Yep.
But this song is very well famous and well known, and a lot of people probably have heard it. It's a nice song.
Yeah.
Then we go to a very, I mean, the name itself is very weird.
Yeah, and this song, I think this is the song on this album that I haven't really listened to.
I think I've heard it passing, but I've never listened to it really.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I probably listened to this album and heard it, but I never analyzed it. It was very fun.
What's the song then?
It's a song that was written by Paul Simon, or the idea came with him when he was drying his clothes.
I think he was washing his clothes.
Washing or drying his clothes.
Yeah, and I don't understand how that really gave him the idea, but probably he saw something.
Yeah, but this song is overall a commentary on advertising, and yeah, kind of. I don't know if it's, we would call it satire, but yeah, it's kind of.
It has some satire. It's yeah. The song is "The Big Bright Green Pleasure Machine."
Oh, yeah, machine.
And I like that. Oh, is it? Oh, I always forget what it's called when you have the same word all through. Like every word begins on the same letter. I always forget what it's called, and then I remember it after. But this song has that that feeling like of every. And it has a very, like, the big, bright, green pleasure machine. It's very nice. And when they sing it in a certain way where they go up and then down. It's a very, like, peak and valley kind of sense. It's very nice. It's, like you said, on the commentary of advertising and hippie movement. Sometimes I forget that this album was in 66 with hippie movement, free love, and the Martin Luther King going about or doing stuff for the African Americans in America, and then Vietnam War. There's so much happening in that time. There's actually a, so that's very cool. There's a line I also thought was, I thought about it and I didn't actually like think he meant it that way, but when you listen to it, it's a little funny, I think.
Yeah,
the line about the girlfriend.
Yeah, and it's like when you put in the picture of that is 1966. Also.
Yeah.
So tell us the line.
Yeah, the line is: are you worried that your girlfriend is a little late? And that means like when it comes to the free love and free, and stuff of hippie movement and people going out of their houses maybe very early like 17, 18, moving out.
Yeah,
and it akins to probably people are using contraception and stuff.
Yeah, and I mean like, don't quote me on this, but I think like the 60s was when you kind of started to have more sex outside the marriage.
Yeah,
and like and teenage pregnancies became a thing and stuff like that.
And you would have to worry about another mouth to feed and take responsibility.
Yeah.
And especially my when it comes to us when we're young people, we're like, oh, I'm in love, I want to do some lovely stuff to you and your body, and then you don't think about the consequences that can happen, which is kind of interesting. So that's a little nice social commentary that the song has. the next song, which is the next song? Let's move on.
You're scrolling down. Okay.
I didn't mean to. But I'm sorry.
The 59th Street Bridge song.
Yeah.
Or I've seen it also that it has, in parentheses, feeling groovy.
Yeah.
It's kind of a song with a kind of a clear message. It's like. Slow down, you move too fast.
Yeah.
And
this is one of the shorter songs,
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it seems... here it says to him, it's a half... it's about a minute and a half long. So 1 minute, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Probably the shortest song.
And I mean, this I would also pick as one of their more favorite famous songs.
Yeah, but maybe not top five, but top 10, right?
Yeah, or I would like put it at fifth or something like that. But yeah.
But I like that. So that's such a short song can have a nice, clear message and have. This is a very basic song. But I mean that in a very nice way. That it's not doing too much on the music, and not doing too much on the lyrics. But it's very sound and very strong in the sense that it's lived on and it's has that message of you can't do move too fast. But the song itself does.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. I realize right now because like. Dimension like the chorus is like feeling groovy and that's a very like hippie it's a hippie word and it's like right after the
big bright green pleasure machine
exactly
and
so it's kind of
I sent my girlfriend the Big Bright Green Pleasure Machine song, and she's like, oh, the big... she tried to read it, and she just, like, got no words out. It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was the song, the 59th Street Bridge song. And the next song is a song that's very cool too, and I think it's probably also, I don't know of all their works if it's like when it comes to selling or so, like if it's one of their best, but I think it's one of their better songs too in a sense.
Yeah,
just how it's written, it's very nice. It's the Dangling Conversation.
Yeah, and it's one of my favorite songs, especially from this album.
Mm.
And it's it paints a real good picture, and it's like the atmosphere in the song is really, really good.
Yeah, it's got some very nice poetic writing throughout the whole song, with the references to certain offers.
Yeah.
And stuff, and it's got a nice light sound through it with.
Yeah, and the song is about a dying relationship, and like how he puts it is like
in context and in words. I think.
Yeah, and like how he describes it really well without like telling you a lot of sad words. It's it's more like.
And I think that's very good with the one of the best things with Simon and Garfunkel is that they can paint up a sad or melancholic way of seeing things, but they're always very beautiful. Like, so it's very nice. Thank you. So I always like that part a lot, that they can paint something that should not be looked at as beautiful, but it is beautiful for a certain lens.
Yeah, exactly.
is there anything special about this? The song. Did you find out something special, or didn't you? I found something kind of cool.
Yeah, you can tell it.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Yeah.
No, but I found that, like we told about Homeward Bound, that Paul Simon didn't like that song, but he liked the picture he painted up. This song was actually he was surprised that this song wasn't actually a bigger hit, and. He thought that the song's lack of success at the time was due that it didn't have a lot of maybe it was too heavy and actually that his co-partner Garfunkel actually disliked the song and thought it was pretentious. Mm. And that's actually a little funny that another song that went like crazy, like Homeward Bound, Paul Simon did not like, and this one he thought would be a big hit, but it was too heavy, and Garfunkel did not think it was a good song. It's a little nice to see, maybe not nice, but fun to see how they were thinking now out of a vacuum, out of context when it comes to the songs.
Mm.
So, yeah. Here's a song that I always like. It's not a bad song, but I just gloss over a little, and this it's a little like cloudy.
Yeah.
This is a filler song for me. But this was at least, and the song is number 8, Flowers Never Bend When the Rain Falls. It has some nice singing, like all the songs. And it does have come from his earlier album, Paul Simon's earlier album, the Paul Simon Songbook.
Yeah.
Which also lends, the Paul Simon Songbook lends a couple of ideas to other songs in this. But I don't have anything to say about it, but I just want to say that it's still a good song, but when you just go through all of them.
Yeah, and when you're comparing to the other songs, it's kind of bland.
Yeah, and then we get to one of the big kahunas of the song, number 9. Who wants to go first? We should both try to say that.
Okay.
Mm. You first or me first?
Or the counter free.
Okay. Wait. I'll do this, 1, 2, 3 with my hands, and then we'll say, a simple, desultory Philippic. So a simple, desultory Philippic. This is a song that has a lot of references and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And he has a lot of names in it and stuff, and this is one of the songs that you really had a fun time researching.
I went deep on this song, but we can talk about the song first and then
the song in a whole, it's a parody of Bob Dylan, a competitor of Paul Simon's at the time. The song itself, like how it is musically, parodies Dylan, like how he sings and he has an harmonica, and then there's a certain lyric like that where he's like Dylan, and it's a peak, or what's it called? It's a thing that's directed to. But the words, desultory Philippic. What do they mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'll do the first one. You do the second one.
Okay.
This is how we do it, you know. Desultory or desultory means when you're going from one subject to another, like constantly, but in a half-hearted way. So if we would be talking about the weather, and then I'm like, you know, the political. The political situation in Nicaragua. I don't know. Like, oh, I like coffee, but do you like marshmallow? But yeah, I'm just segueing bad between them.
Yeah.
And the other word.
Philippic.
Philippic, yeah.
Philippic.
Philippic.
It means fiery, damning speech.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. You can explain it more because you wrote the.
Yeah, I know it, right? It's just that what it's mean, or if you know what a tirade is, like when you're just talking about a certain person or figure. It's mostly meant about people than subjects, but it could work probably. Yeah. But it's when you're just condemning something or talking about one thing, and you can notice that. Yeah, he has that sarcastic, satirical tone or tongue-in-cheek tone against Bob Dylan. But here, before you go into this, can you just tell the audience and me how long you sat researching this?
I went into a rabbit hole, like I said, and I was sitting like 1.5 hour, I think, like almost 2.
Why? Like, no, before we go to this, why? How could you find so much information? Is there something certain? In the lyrics, something special in the lyrics, or is it because every name is a reference to something?
Yeah, he mentions a lot of names, and all those names are reference to people. So that's what I want to do. I want to do quiz time.
Yay!
So I have written down on paper.
Yeah.
All the names from the song.
Normally, we compile our research together, but for some reason I have to do a quiz now, so
yeah.
Good luck to me.
I thought it would be a cool segment then.
Okay,
so the first name that comes up in the song is he kind of in the...
Oh, it's in parentheses, right?
No, he kind of twisted some of the names.
Okay.
So he sings Norman Maillard, but I'm gonna be nice and give you the real name. That is, I wanna preface this by, I did like 1.5 hour research on this, but I might have gotten something wrong, and if I have, hit me up on social media.
Yeah.
But don't hang me.
And also I did none, so please be nice to me.
Yeah.
Good luck.
So, Norman Mailer is the first.
I have never
Who is Norman Mailer?
Mailer's name at all. Is he an artist? Can I have, like, you can at least give me a, like, close, you know, hot or cold at least, when I don't know. Is he an artist?
No.
Is he a politician?
No.
Is he a news person?
Yeah.
So he's a...
Getting closer there.
Journalist or news anchor, that's my guess.
He's a journalist and a writer.
Okay, what's he famous for?
He's most famous for the book The Naked and the Dead. I didn't go all the way in. Also, a fun thing, you caught me looking at the FBI documents.
Yeah, I saw some FBI stuff happening.
So FBI has a vault on their homepage where they put all their, like, this
they open up their certain
when they open up the document for public they put it there.
Yeah, they have a certain time limit.
And this guy has 160 documents in the FBI world related. And I asked him for it, and it has like he's seeking visa for going to Cuba, and it's all kind of stuff. So if you want to go into rabbit hole, I recommend that one.
But be careful, because it's got with the FBI to do so.
So, Maxwell Tillard.
I think I recognize this name, but also...
Or I can give you the full name. Maxwell D. Taylor.
Yeah. Is he the real Taylor? That was a good joke, okay? Well, I think this is the part that I think I recognize the name, but also we've just been binge-watching Planet of the Apes, and there's a Taylor character, so this is effing with my mind right now. Is he an... I don't know. Is he an artist?
No.
Is he a politician?
Yeah.
Okay, a senator or a congressman?
No.
Okay, I don't know, man.
But you're kind of... He was an American general.
Oh, okay. He served, so, kind of a right ballpark.
Yeah, and then he served under President Kennedy.
Oh, cool.
And he had a position in the White House, but I forgot to write that down, but I failed on my research. So John O'Hara, or John O'Hara.
This is the problem, is that you recognize these names because I've been listening to the song. So, but he's a writer.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't remember if he wrote books or like TV shows, or he was a like journalist. But he was a writer, right?
Yes,
he's writer. Right.
Yeah, you write on writer.
Yeah, dude.
He's kind of he released a lot of short stories.
Oh, okay.
He kind of some would say he's kind of forgotten in time, but that's what he's most famous for, his short stories.
Is there one like the biggest one or
I would recognize? I didn't recognize the anymore, I kind of didn't include
that. That's fine.
Yeah.
Bad research, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
McNamara, then, or.
What's the full name?
Robert Strange McNamara.
Is he Doctor Strange for Marvel?
No. He's not a surgeon.
Okay.
I can give you
surgeon.
That one.
No way. I think I recognize this name too. But I'm not sure. I would guess he's in the entertainment business.
No.
No?
Can you give you a clue? He's connected to one of the previous ones.
So he's either a army person or he's a journalist person. He's a journalist.
No.
He's an army person?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know.
He was a American business executive.
Executive.
And secretary of defense. With President
Kennedy. Then I understand what you mean by connection.
Yeah. This is a hard one. Here. Rolling Stoned.
I guess that has something to do with the Rolling Stones.
yeah. Good. And
Keith Richards and Mick Jagger, right?
Here's another hard one. Beatles.
Well, he probably liked the Egyptians a lot, right?
No,
I think he meant the Beatles from the UK.
Yeah, and now we're going to see if you're going to get this one.
This is the one I think I knew, right? I think I...
Ayn Rand, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Oh, it's like A-Y, right?
It's A-Y-N.
Yeah, Ayn, I think
R-A-N-D.
Nope, don't recognize it at all. But is it political, again?
No.
Entertainment?
Well, everything is political, if you look at it the right way.
No, entertainment maybe.
No.
I don't know, man.
It's
her. It's a she?
I think also he, but probably it's a he.
It's a he or a she?
Yeah.
Anybody can do whatever they
want. I wrote she, so maybe it is.
Yeah, we should not assume someone's gender if we don't know, really, but
Wikipedia
does so.
Yeah, anime. She's an American-Russian writer and philosopher.
Ah, cool.
She's most famous for writing her book Atlas Shrugged.
Oh my god, I know that.
Yeah, I knew you would know that.
Those are movies now.
Yeah, I know. And she is also famous for creating the philosophical system of objectivism.
Ah, cool. So that's why you always look at me that way.
So the next one is Phil Spector.
Yeah, and this one I do recognize.
Yeah, and it's Phil Spector is the real name.
I so recognize this. I want to say entertainment.
Yeah.
Musician, I want to say.
Yeah, he's a musician.
I want to say maybe some air horn, what's it called, jazz, or you know what I mean. Like a trumpet, I would say, but that's my guess.
Yeah, he's an American record producer and musician.
God,
he's worked with many Beatles, like, he's worked with many bands like the Beatles.
He has worked with many Beatles, too.
Yeah.
The Beatles.
Yeah.
All five. I love this.
Yeah.
But the Ramones too. That's kind of cool. Yeah.
And the list goes on. I picked the two most famous. That's a rabbit hole you can go into.
Those are always fun.
The next thing is Lou Adler or Lou Adler. Adler, yeah.
Yeah, Adler, like Irene Adler from. Yeah. Lou Adler is also a musician, I would guess.
Yeah, he shares a occupation of the previous one.
The previous one was, what's it called now again? I always forget what it's called. That you just said it.
Yeah, you said that.
Producer or record.
Record producer.
Yeah.
But he was also a film director and producer.
So he was in the
So, but he, I think the most famous artist I found that he worked with was the Mamas and the Papas.
Ah, cool.
But he also was the executive producer of the 1975 Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Ah, nice. That's a classic, man.
And he directed, and this was kind of cool for me, Up in Smoke. The Cheese and Chong movie.
Cheech. They have albums, man. We should listen.
Yeah.
We could talk about that sometime.
That will be coming up.
Oh, good, thank you.
So, Barry Sadler.
Also entertainment, I think, right? No?
He's kind of
music business, I think. No,
he made music.
He's a musician, right?
Yeah,
I think I recognize the name, but I'm not sure.
He's an American soldier and a musician.
Ah.
So he's kind of famous for a song called "Ballad of the Green Berets."
It was
a very patriotic song.
Yeah, I recognize that song.
It seemed like he was like, kind of a musician for the armies.
Nice. Ah, so that's who that is.
Well,
you just put it down. I thought you were done, man.
No.
Okay. I'm gonna forget it.
So Lenny Bruce.
Oh, that I know that one.
Yeah.
Comedian.
Yeah.
Died at a certain age that we will talk about later.
Yeah. So he's an American.
Stand-up comedian. And he gave, what was it? The guy that smashed the melons, he gave a... Because I saw that... But the guy that smashed the melons, and then Richard Pryor, who I like a lot, have a couple of influences from Lenny Bruce. And I found that kind of cool.
Yeah, it's also cool because he was seen as very obscene and like...
Against the norm, right?
Yeah, he he went to court with obscene charges, like kind of like Allen Ginsberg.
Oh, cool.
I remember reading in one set he did, he was like saying cocksucker. And that was kind of
you have to weird push
in
the art.
60s.
You have to push the art form, man.
Yeah, exactly. Then there's Dylan.
Bob Dylan, of course.
Yeah.
Dylan Thomas or something.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the one I was talking about earlier, that when he made a reference to Dylan, he made it like tongue in cheek to Dylan, but he then said Dylan Thomas.
Yeah. Exactly. And Dylan Thomas was?
Now I've actually seen his papers, so I'm going to say he was a poet.
Yeah, he was a Welsh poet.
Welsh?
Yeah, Welsh.
From the UK.
So, Mick Jagger then?
Well, that's probably a guy that worked at the convenience store that Paul Simon probably went to a lot, right? No, it's probably the guy from, you know, those stones that roll a lot, Rolling Stones.
Yeah, exactly. Andy Warhol.
He is an artist, I want to say. He's not just a painter because he made stuff, but he's a, well, he was active in the 60s too, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was like the leading artist of the visual art movement known as pop art.
Yeah.
And what band did he work closely with?
Wait, he worked close with a band?
Yes.
What, like, did he do their artwork or something?
Yeah, he did artwork for them. They did, like, collaborations.
It's an American band, I guess.
I don't want to say that because I would sound stupid. So I'm just going to hold my tongue.
I should know that. I think I've heard this, but I don't know in my head right now.
If I say banana.
Banana? What? B-A-N-A-N-A-S, bananas. Why does... The Monkees?
No. The Velvet Underground.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, that's not really... Wait, how did you get bananas from the Velvet Underground?
Their most famous record has a banana.
Oh, yeah. Now I get where you're going from.
Yeah.
I'm like, the only thing I can, like, connect with is the monkey. Freaking Planet of the Apes binge. They're actually apes, not monkeys.
Exactly. So Roy Haley.
I don't know that name. Actually, should I know?
Yeah, you should know then. Because if you research this record, you should know it.
Oh yeah, no wait, I did. I hit this paper. Yeah, wait, he was a producer or record executive or something that worked with them, right?
Yeah, he's a record producer for this record and a lot of other Simon.
It just took like. You said like 20 names, you know, it gets in my head.
Art Garfunkel, then.
That's his weird distant cousin. No, that's his bandmate.
Yeah. And then we have the fun thing. So in the end, he kind of speaks.
Yeah.
And then he says, Albert.
Yeah, he says, he plays harmonica in the song and then he drops it. Or I don't know if he drops it for real, but it does sound like it. And he says, I dropped my harmonica, Albert. And who is Albert?
Yeah, who is Albert?
I think it's probably the smart choice would be to go with Art Garfunkel, I think. But maybe an Albert is a way of saying, like, a nickname. But I had a conspiracy theory for this one, and that was that it's Albert Einstein. And I did some, I don't remember all of it now, but I did some like weird clicking around on certain dates. And you can get, like, this is a, if you want to do, you can do a conspiracy theory about what you want. But if you click around in a certain way, you could probably get it to be Albert Einstein because of certain stuff. But I think it's Art Garfunkel. You don't know?
Yeah, well, there's no proof of it, but... The name that comes in mind is Albert Grossman, and he was Bob Dylan's manager.
Ah, that could be true.
Yeah.
That could be cool. God dang, is the quiz over? Wait, okay, let me see now. I'm gonna try and see how many I kinda got.
Mm.
Well, you gave me a couple of clues, but I did not get the second one.
Mm.
I kinda got this.
Mm. Two.
So two, not this one. Not this one.
3-4.
Yeah, 3-4 with Rolling Stone. I didn't get Ayn Rand. Phil Spector.
Yeah,
Lou Adler, I kind of but you can think. Yeah. I did not get...
I'll give you a 6.
Yeah, Barry Sadler, no, I would say.
Louis you, Le- yeah, you said
oh, yeah, was yeah. A mission, so yeah, that's true. Lenny Bruce, I got. Dylan, and this one we can take away because I cheated. Mick Jagger, Andy Warhol, Roy Haley. Yeah, kind of got a lot, actually.
Around 10, I would say, or 11.
I mean, it's got a lot of names in it, but or just repetitions of names, but it's still fun how he gets that to sound very... the song just goes on and on, but it doesn't feel like it's just spouting information. Like if somebody would read an article to you, like they're just speaking names all the time or dates when you are in history in school. This is more a little more fun, I think.
Yeah, and it's kind of a fun, like oddity. You kind of don't, you don't get this kind of lyrics in modern time.
Like, no, yeah. Well, it depends. We just listened to on the first album. I mean, the first episode we did.
Oh, it's another kind of.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking when I'm meaning the first episode. The first episode we did was Crack Up with the reference one.
Yeah. This is more contemporary. It's like more agree. Of its time. It's like.
But still, Fleet Foxes and Crack Up is. That's a weird.
Yeah.
Comparison.
That has.
Like one in a million.
Yeah.
But I do agree. Yeah, but it's a cool song, and I like it a lot, and it's very fun to listen to when you're on the bus or something.
Yeah.
To listen to, yeah. Next song is number 10. Thank God we're on a new song.
I don't know.
You can take a breath now. Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
And this is a song I've always liked a lot too, and it's I just like just from the name. The name is For Emily, Whenever I May Find Her. English is my second language, slash first sometimes, depends, because we talked a lot of English in my family, but I know that you can say whenever I may find her, but often when you talk about the person, it's like wherever I may find someone, so I think it's just whenever I may find her, it's like that, and it also comes back to this... like the song Dangling Conversation, right? Yeah. No, I'm thinking about Canticle, Scarborough Affair. This, the thing about love going away, but trying to get back to that. For Emily, whenever I may find her.
And our context is kind of have a little time traveler feel.
Yeah. It does. Like the time traveler's wife, in a sense.
Yeah, kind of.
But this is a song that I think is a very pretty... it's a very pretty song, and it's very chill throughout, and it's a very nice song to go after the more a little fast upbeat song of a simple desultory Philippic.
Yeah.
Say that five times fast. But For Emily, Whenever I May Find Her, there's actually a quote from Paul Simon where he said that the song is not about an imaginary girl, Emily, but about a belief, like I don't know if he means world belief or like a belief about the person.
Yeah, I kind of take it as a belief of like love and...
Yeah, maybe and a soulmate or true love. Yeah, I think so too. Like, it's about the belief of finding someone. And he goes on that to say that while the song Overs from the album Bookends is about the loss of that belief. So there's a... and we listened to this one and then Overs after, and it was very nice. To listen to them back to back, I would say.
Yeah, and then they kind of share some themes, and it's kind of interesting.
I need to take a little sip of water, so you can introduce this song that is...
Well, I don't know why I'm introducing this. This is your song.
Just say the name of the
song. Yeah, okay. So the love song on this record is A Poem on the Underground Wall.
Yes, A Poem on the Underground Wall. This is my song. This is... I wrote this as a little joke because we have the same research on Google Docs. So I have a little joke here that it says, this song is my favorite song of all time, spelled as...
Oh, you were talking. Oh, sorry.
My favorite song of all time, as how you spell the herb time, as in the album. Wink, wink. I'm a good jokester, I know. But honestly, this is the reason why I picked this album. This is the... song I listen to sometimes when I don't have if I don't want to listen to any other Simon and Garfunkel song, this is the one I pick up because it's a very good song when it comes to the lyrics and the musical, but also, and this is something I always think when out of context from this album, that this is a very short song, but it has so much impact, at least on me as a person, I think. And I just love everything about this song, how it has the musical progression and the lyrical storytelling. Like, I like the part about just when they start the song, they tap the guitar, like the wood of the guitar. And that is like the footsteps of either the commuters or the person that we're following throughout. And that keeps on going from when he stops. Or when he keeps on running, it goes faster. And then he mentions a horse and carriage type with... carriage comes to meet the groom, and it just picks up, and I like that a lot.
Mm, yeah.
And that's very cool. And I like that it follows up in a... and I mean, you said that a previous song was the Dangling Conversation as a songwriting mastery. I would say that this, for me personally, is like songwriting mastery, how the storytelling is. So I like that a lot. But the poem on the underground wall, a lyric of it is very debated still to this day, right? Mm. And that is a certain lyric that goes that the he takes a colored crayon and writes a word of four letters.
Yeah.
That's not how the lyrics go, I'm just retelling.
Yeah.
But it's very nice. And before we go and discuss these four letters, I think anyone who loves lyrics, like dissecting lyrics and like reading poems, you should really read this. Just, you don't have to even listen to it. Just read it. It's very wonderful. But the four letters that form a poem on the underground wall, what are those lyrics? Or what is that poem?
Mm.
Some think that the four letters can be meaning like the word love or hate or maybe something else. Like a certain word that you found out, right?
Yeah, I kind of read that during a concert in 67, the duo talked about this song, and they kind of partly also talked about how this kind of the inspiration for the song came from the cover of Wednesday Morning 3 a.m.
their first album.
Mm. But also that was Swinglish for you all out there. You're welcome.
It means and.
Yes. But they kind of also talked about the word might on the wall might be fuck.
Yeah, on the Wednesday for morning, yeah. And that's a little fun. And also if it would be, it has a little... like, because a poem on the underground wall, he wrote that when he was in England, and I haven't commuted a lot underground in England, so I don't know how it is, but sometimes when you commute, you just have that feeling of fuck, there's a lot of people, or fuck, it's late and stuff, so that's a little fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's a word you also
just say
see a lot on the walls written.
I think the most beautiful, for me personally, even though it's a little... cliche or maybe cheesy, it would be if it was love, but I also, because of the hippie movement and stuff. Mm. But there's one word I found out today that a lot of fans think, or a lot of people think, and it's actually the word poem itself is a four letter word, and it would be kind of meta if the word on the underground wall is a poem, a literal, the word poem.
Yeah.
So it's like a little meta joke, and I mean, I love meta jokes, so that would be kind of nice. But this is my favorite song, and if I could play one song, it would probably be that. For anybody who hasn't heard of Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah.
But then we come to a very cool song, it is a song, but still you could say it's not a song, in a sense.
Yeah.
Because it's 7 o'clock news / Silent Night.
Yeah, and... well... the Desultory Philippic was the first rabbit hole. This is the second rabbit hole.
Yeah, and this has some interesting stuff. And this has something with Lenny Bruce too to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, this song is one of those songs when it comes to the whole album that you should listen to in headphones or good sound system, but especially this one. Because it starts out, the Silent Night / 7 o'clock news is a combo of a news segment that they do, that they took news bulletins of the actual events of August 3rd, 1966, and they put that up by Charlie O'Donnell, that reads the voice as a news anchor, like, tonight at the 7 o'clock news.
Yeah.
I don't have that bass, so I can't do that. But yeah, so he reads just what happens, and then they sing Silent Night, they start with Silent Night, and then they come. And as the track progresses more and more, the news report takes a greater presence throughout, and it increases and increases, and how the mix on the track was purposely done so it would clash with the piano, then was mixed so the piano would be on the left side of your headphones at least, because I've listened to it in headphones, and the news to the right, and then the vocals would be like in between them. So when you listen, it feels a little like if you're like hearing voices or something, but because somebody's talking here and somebody's talking here, but then you have this level throughout that comes together. And it's very cool that they start out just singing very subtle with the seven, Silent Night.
Mm.
And then the news goes bigger and bigger and they grow quiet and quieter. And then at the end, we close with Silent Night like this. Also with, at that time in 66, they didn't have what we have today, that we have a screen everywhere and you hear like music or entertainment or news everywhere. So you're like surrounded by this and bombarded by it. And that's really cool.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever heard or listened to this song. I mean, we said we hadn't maybe listened to one of the songs earlier, but I think I've never heard or listened to this
one.
I
kind of heard it and shrugged it off.
Mm.
This is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not of today.
Yeah.
But analyzing it, it's became
cool.
Kind of a rabbit hole.
Yeah. I thought that was cool. We tried to not... I mean, if we want to talk about something about the research or the album before we sit and record like we do now, we sometimes do, but we try not to.
Mm.
But I mean, I remember when I listened to this and I like tried not to talk to you about it. And then we just hung out and I accidentally said, or you said like, oh, did you listen through it? And we both said, yeah. And you're like, oh, did you hear the last one?
Yeah.
Because when you don't know that it's on there, it really grabs you. And that I thought that was cool that we both have that like, oh my God, it's so cool. It really grabs you when you listen to it maybe the first 2-3 times.
Yeah.
And that's very, very cool.
It's like, and it shows how, what I love, like the stuff I love the most of Simon and Garfunkel is their experimental stuff.
Mm.
And this is really like, it really encapsulates that thinking.
Yeah, and I do understand that it is more akin to their time than ours, but I still like that vacuum that you can listen to it.
Yeah.
But there there is a cool YouTube cover that you can find that is Silent Night / 7 o'clock News amazing cover in parentheses video, and that is from 2017, and they take news from 2017 on a certain day.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool, akin to more or how we are today, even though it's 2 years old now. So it's also cool that we can do that and compare.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get into the rabbit hole.
Ooh,
now.
Okay. This rabbit hole started with me pointing out that it was weird that in the song they say Lenny Bruce died 42 years old, while, other places, they're stated that he died at 40 years old.
Yeah, and we thought first maybe what if, because it was, this is something we have to take up before we go on, that we thought, okay, if they recorded the same day that they did the news bulletins, maybe they got it wrong.
Mm.
But we noticed that they didn't record the album the same day. It was later in August. It was the 22nd or something.
But
So it goes on with maybe some more stuff.
Yeah, and it's like, we were like, oh yeah, it's probably a mistake. But
and then I found out something more.
Yeah, that they mentioned a murder by Richard Speck. And they say there's 9 people murdered.
Yeah, 9 student nurses that died.
Actually, it was 8.
Yeah, there were 9 nurses, but there were only 8 who died.
Yeah.
But it gets a little weirder with and more.
And the third contradiction is that they say Richard Nixon spoke, addressed the American Legion.
No, the veterans of foreign wars.
Sorry. Yeah, in the song they say he addressed the veterans of foreign wars, but actually it was the American Legion.
Yeah. So we had this little talk about what if the new segments. First, we talked about when we going through this is our thought process. We first talked about what if they did it wrong because the news thing, and then we noticed Richard Speck thing, and we're like, okay, that's weird if they get 2 things wrong. Now they got a third thing wrong. So, and they have maybe, let's say, 5 or 6 news things going through. Yeah. So around half of it's wrong. Why would it be wrong, right? That's what we started yeah. talking about. Like, and then we started doing this. Okay, dear listener, if you've ever had a good friend or like a family member and you can see in their eyes you're thinking the same thought, me and Viking here, we had that. And we're like, oh my God, are you thinking the same thing? And I hope you're thinking the same thing. And what is that thing we're thinking?
So, is this on purpose? Is this a small commentary on like
news?
Yeah, and misinformation in media,
especially in the 60s.
Yeah, and
with the hippies going around and telling like the older generation, trying to control them with the government and stuff.
Or is it just? Because the thing, like we said, the events takes place August 3rd. According to Wikipedia, the song is recorded August 22.
Yeah, so they would have more information to know that these things that are wrong are actually wrong.
Yeah, they could, if they did the research.
Mm, which they probably did, because Paul Simon was very meticulous about lyrics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why is this? Why is the three inconsistencies and
I hope from my point of view, I will always listen to the lyric now and think that this is like I told you about the meta thing earlier, that I think this is a meta, not maybe joke, but a meta satirical comment about the media today in 1966, but also like the government and stuff. And also I'm gonna do a full circle now. We've been binging Planet of the Apes because just a couple of days ago, earlier this month, was the 51st anniversary of Planet of the Apes. I've been making Viking Sea. And in Planet of the Apes, that is filmed in 1968, if I remember correctly, they have a lot of stuff that's commenting about how the younger generation don't like how their older generation is controlling them for certain messaging and like stuff. And I think that this is also hearkening on that. And that is us coming full circle with Planet of the Apes and Simon and Garfunkel. And I think it's on purpose. And I think that's super cool. So, and if you, dear listener, like these like kind of small things where somebody puts in an Easter egg and then puts in an even smaller Easter egg, you should just look it up. And I mean, it's hard to find information about it because it's like 40, 50 years ago, right? 40, 50.
Yeah, 50. Yeah.
Almost 60, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so, but that's cool. And the things you can find are cool. So,
And I kind of want to hear your thoughts on it. So, like, if you have any thoughts on, like, the whole record, but especially this song and, like, what this can mean, this inconsistencies, I would like to hear it.
Yeah. I mean, if you have any feelings or thoughts about any of the songs or episodes we ever do, I hope you hit us up. And we're gonna plug our social media later, but we have to, we're done with this album now.
Yeah.
But before going over to what we're gonna do next time, what was your overall feeling of the album? What, like, did you like it? Did you not like it? Because you said you didn't listen to this album a lot.
I like it. It's not my favorite Simon Garfunkel record, but the high points are very high, and the low points are kind of low.
I think, actually, that the high points are so high, and the low points are not low at all. I think they're like ground level, so they're only risen up. But because, especially with all the songs being so short, like Patterns and Cloudy and the one more, we said they're still wonderful songs, but they're short, so you just skip through them very fast.
I can agree with that. But some songs like Cloudy, I kind of just thought, kind of find boring.
Yeah, it was a filler episode.
Yeah, and it's kind of like that. But yeah, I agree with you. It's a short record, and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. Which song would you prompt our listeners to listen to if they want to listen to one song? Like, which song would you pick? Maybe would it be the Dangling Conversation? I think it maybe or what would you pick?
No, I mean, like, like if they haven't heard any Simon and Garfunkel ever, I probably would put on like 59th Street Bridge song or like something simple and short. But like if you want some more complicated, I mean, dangling conversation or a poem on the
yeah, band, that's my pick. I've actually shown shown people that I know haven't listened to them a lot, and just heard like Sounds of Silence and the hits on radio. I've shown them as the first like real song, Pornogra, and they've been like blown away. So that's the song I would pick.
Yeah.
So it's a good album, and I hope you guys listen to it a lot.
Yeah, but my question, I have a last question before we move on. What is your favorite Simon and Garfunkel album?
Can't remember like each song on all their albums, but I do know that this album has one of my favorite songs of them, and I've always also liked to listen to Scarborough Fair in my headphones when I'm doing stuff on the town, so I like that one. And then Sounds of Silence with the original one is still nice, but the remastered. But I think I would probably go Bridge Over Troubled Water is a good album.
For me personally, it's Bookends.
Yeah, I thought you would say so.
Yeah,
it's between the two, I think, for me, because they're very good. I just like the, I just remember the song Bridge Over Trouble very good in my head, and some of the followings, like giving me a good feeling.
Yeah, but like I was talking about before, I like the experimental stuff of Simon Garfunkel, and Bookends is where it's at. And we probably will cover that album sometime. Yeah.
Or maybe all of them. I mean, probably. They're only five, so.
Yeah.
We're in it for the long haul, baby.
So.
We're done with that. Thank God.
Go on. It was good.
Next time, this how it is, like we said a little quick in the beginning, we give each other an album and then we listen to it, and hopefully you do that too. So my album, we've listened to that now, and now we're on to an album that you're gonna give me.
Yeah.
What?
And now we had three kind of American.
Yeah, that's true.
Folk bands.
Kind of true. I mean, okay, Arcade Fire is not that folky though.
Yeah, but they have folk influences.
Yeah. Okay. True. I guess I'll take it.
And so, I'm gonna switch the table.
Oh my god!
I'm gonna flip the table.
My computer is very expensive.
I'm gonna go all around the world through the little continent of Australia.
Okay, it's very little, yes.
Yeah, the little, I mean.
Where Mad Max and kangaroos are just...
I have nothing on Europe.
Yeah.
So I'm going with the band Spiderbait.
Yeah, you see, I have a CD... What, case, no?
Yeah.
Or I don't know what it's called. Yeah, Spiderbait.
The
Flight of Wally Funk.
Yeah, the album name is The Flight of Wally Funk. And it's kind of...
Oh my god, what? The font on the back of this is very, very weird and cool.
Yeah,
it's making me get a headache.
Cool record. It's Australian... we're gonna talk about it, but they're... What genre is this band is kind of complicated, I would say. If you look at this record, at least.
So we're gonna talk about that next time.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about that next time. Yeah. But it's an Australian band that I have. I got this album when I was very young, so it's kind of fun to go back to it and listen to it. I haven't listened to it in a while.
Nice, but I like that you're switching up. I'm gonna try to find. Some album that's gonna switch it up, I hope. I do like lyrics a lot, and I do like some nice music, as we've noticed maybe with my picks for it being Crack Up, and then now this. They're actually very akin to each other, I would say, like good lyrics and good music.
Yeah.
Guys or girls, or people with the guitars and a good vocal, I always love that.
Yeah.
And then good harmonies, of course. I'm gonna fall for that. But yeah, that's this episode, and we're gonna round out with... that you can hit us up on all our social media, because if you want to talk to us, give us suggestions, or condemn us for our horrible research or something, you can do that on our Google Mail, which is therecordswappers@gmail.com.
Yeah.
In Swedish, we call it a snabla, which is very weird to even translate into English.
What's snobble in English?
Is
it a snable? Because
no. It's a...
A trunk? Yeah. Trunk, yeah.
So it's a trunk aid. That's what we call it. So it's very weird. We have a weird language here in Sweden. But then it's... We're at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All is The Record Swappers. So you can find us there. And if you wonder where you can listen to it, I mean, not only where you're listening to it right now, I hope, is SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Spreaker. The Trinity of S.
Yeah.
They all have us. Hopefully, we're going to have a lot of episodes coming in the future, too. So yeah. The Record Swappers everywhere, kind of. And Google, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Spreaker. Have a fun time. And we hope to hear from you.
Yeah.
Catch you later.
See you next time.
Bye.